You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Today we're talking to a man whose life has been saved by cannabis. He has a form of muscular dystrophy. His doctors loaded him up with drugs, said there was nothing more they could do, and he ended up in hospice. Joining us from the United States is David Dawson, who has written a book about cannabis titled Medical Cannabis, The Definitive Guide. He's here to tell us his remarkable story. David, good of you to join us. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
David, what type of muscular dystrophy do you have?
I have a form of muscular dystrophy that's called Charcot-Marie tooth.
And exactly what is that?
Basically what it does is it starts at the extremities and then works its way in towards the heart.
Now, what were some of your symptoms that you were experiencing prior to your diagnosis?
Actually, for my form of muscular dystrophy, it's more on the lines of basic neuropathic pain, big-time pain at times. And essentially, the way it's traditionally treated is through an increasingly strong series of powerful opiates. And I was on opiate therapy for 28 years. Doctors would essentially say, okay, well, this particular opiate that you're on now, you've developed a tolerance to. We've got plenty of opiates to choose from. And what we'll do is we'll change the opiate and increase the dose. So I went through a variety of opiates, fentanyl, oxycontin, oxycodone, Vicodin, codeine. I mean, I can just name a whole string, and there's no real sense in doing that. It's just this is how it's done. Finally, they prescribed me a dose that was so high it caused me to have a stroke. That was the last day that I walked. I also lost the use of my left arm on that day.
Wow.
Are you still can you walk today as a result of what has transpired since you were on the opioids?
No. No, okay. I'm in a wheelchair. I have a power wheelchair sitting right next to me. I'm in a hotel room right now in Portland, Oregon, with two cats and a wheelchair. You know, this has just been my life for the past 10 years because of what, you know, medical science decided was the most appropriate approach for me.
After your stroke, David, what did the doctors tell you?
Essentially, they said, well, they came to my deathbed. They said, well, we've done everything we can do, so we're going to throw him on to hospice. I was on hospice for a number of months in Arizona. My family pulled me out of Arizona, put me in a federal housing facility so that they could take care of me and be closer to me while I died. At the time, I wasn't really that interested in dying, so I started doing some research. And one of the things that I researched was medicinal cannabis. I've been researching it since 2010. I'm actually a doctoral student now, a PhD student at North Central University, working towards my PhD in biomolecular psychology.
David, let me back up a bit. What was it like for you psychologically when you were in hospice?
It's a really, really depressing thing. And also when you're on that many opiates and that many drugs, you basically have, it's like your synapses aren't firing properly. So you can't really do a great deal. That was when I kind of got into working with medicinal cannabis. And I had a friend that from Colorado that got me some medicinal cannabis. And that just kind of turned my life around. I'm now, like I say, I'm capable of processing my thoughts a lot better. I'm actually a 4.0 student at my university.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. Now, when you started taking cannabis, what form of cannabis did you take?
Essentially flower. I vaporized with flower.
And how soon after you started taking cannabis did you notice that it was working?
I guess it took me about 2 or 3 weeks to wean myself off the opiates, and I haven't touched a synthetic pharmaceutical since that time.
Good for you.
So you were on cannabis for 2 to 3 weeks, which allowed you to get off the drugs that you were on within 2 or 3 weeks. And did you experience any side effects from weaning yourself off these drugs?
I don't know if the side effects were from weaning myself off the drugs or, you know, just the fact that they're, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to put this. Where the question is, are the side effects because you weaned yourself off the drugs, or are the side effects because, I guess the main side effect I had from the cannabis was just generally a sense of well-being.
And how did your family react to you taking cannabis?
That's a really interesting question, because my family, my brother-in-law is a compounding pharmacist, and his first reaction when I said, okay, I'm going to start going with the cannabinoid therapies, and his first reaction was, well, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't even want to know about it.
Interesting.
My sister, well, I don't know. I don't want to get into really that much of my personal life, I guess.
Okay, that's fine.
Because, you know, there's a certain stigma involved in being a medical cannabis patient, especially in the Midwest. I don't know if it's that way in Canada. It doesn't seem to be that way here in Oregon, but in Illinois, you know, the conservative Midwest. Holy cow!
Different story, hey?
Yeah, big time. Big time different story.
Well, I think it's very interesting for me to hear your story, because here you have a person who is suffering from muscular dystrophy, who is on a cocktail of opiates, and these drugs can actually kill you. But as soon as you mention marijuana to someone, they just back off and think you were mainlining heroin or something. It's crazy.
Right. Well, see, I tend not to even use the word marijuana, because it's a racist word, and it has that stigma that has been attached to it. And the word marijuana was actually coined by a man named Harry Anslinger in the 1930s, because it sounded foreign and scary. Until then, it was the typical term was cannabis, and cannabis is the scientific name. It's the more appropriate Latin term for the medicine. Generally, what I tell people, if you're going to use an M word, use medicine.
It's very true. Now, David, were you surprised at all when you first started taking cannabis at how quickly you felt a sense of relief?
Well, not really, because my story's a little different, because in college, I used cannabis recreationally. I realized then that cannabis had, it helped with controlling my pain from the muscular dystrophy. But after college, I got a job teaching at a university, a small private college in Duluth, Minnesota. As a lark, one summer I took a job in the casino industry. And in the casino industry, you're subject to periodic drug testing. And it's no problem if you're on opiates. You know, that's no big deal. But you pop for cannabis, you know, and then you're out on the street.
It's reefer madness, isn't it?
Yeah. So essentially what happened with me is at that point, I got off the cannabis and did exactly what the federal government told me to do and the medical community told me to do, and that was to take the opiates. So I was on the opiates for like 28 years until, you know, they basically tried to kill me.
Now, when you talk to other people about the fact that you use cannabis and you have weaned yourself off the opiates within 2 or 3 weeks. What response do you get from others?
That depends on the individual, and it depends on the group. Like doctors in Illinois, see, the problem is it's all an economic incentive to – Big Pharma has so much power over physicians, especially in Illinois, because Big Pharma has bought up the three major healthcare organizations in Illinois and are actually punishing doctors that recommend cannabis to their patients and not allow them to go on, you know, trips to Cancun for medical conventions and that sort of thing. My doctor, the doctor that certified me, they cut his practice down so that he could only take patients within a 26-mile radius of the clinic that he worked in.
This is because he prescribed cannabis to you?
Because he recommended. Yeah, you don't prescribe it in the United States because it's a Schedule I drug, so it's recommended. Ooh. It's not prescribed.
All right.
Yeah, Schedule I means it is the equivalent of heroin. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's Schedule I. It's considered one of the most dangerous substances that a human can ingest.
Which, as you know, is very foolish because there is no record of anyone dying from an overdose of cannabis. But
right, yeah, nobody has ever been. There's no way you can overdose on cannabis. Well, actually, if to overdose on cannabis, you'd have to eat like 5,000 pounds of it.
Yeah, I read. Yes,
you can think about what 5,000 pounds actually looks like. You know those big hay bales, huge round hay bales.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two of those are 5,000 pounds. You eat 5,000. You eat two of those. Yeah, you're going to die. But it's not going to be the cannabis the cannabis that actually kills you. It's you're going to die because you've eaten 5,000 pounds of something.
Or else the bale fell on your head.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last.
No, or else the 5,000 pound bale fell on your head. That's why you died.
Yeah, there's a variety of different ways of dying, I guess.
Yeah, it really is an astonishing thing that cannabis has this stigma attached to it and the demonization that has gone on for 80 years. When it has not killed one person, but the opiate drugs that you were on have killed many people. There's an opioid crisis in Canada now, and I believe also in the United States.
Right.
That people are dying. And I believe it was Sanjay Gupta, the doctor who works for CNN, who said that 19 people a day die in the United States from prescription drugs, yet nobody has died from cannabis. Yet somehow the public accepts the opioid drugs from the pharmaceutical industry, but they back away with the mention of cannabis. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, there's two things I wanted to address here, and I'm trying to bring it together in my mind. The first is doctors were trained that the opiates are not addictive. You know, this is how they were trained. The second is that the molecules that are contained within the cannabis plant are the exact same molecules as that the human body or the vertebrate body produces.
So we have cannabis within our system, all of us.
Of course, yeah. For example, there's an endocrine. See, there's two groups of molecules that you have to think about here. You've got to think about endocannabinoids and phytocannabinoids, okay? So endocannabinoids are – endo means from within, the cannabinoids that the human body produces. Phytocannabinoids are – phyto meaning flower. Phytocannabinoids are the cannabinoids that the flower produces, the cannabis plant produces. Okay, and they're the exact same molecule. This was demonstrated by a man in Israel named Raphael Meshulam, and he discovered that in 1992, he discovered that the THC molecule or the THC phytocannabinoid is the exact same molecule as the anandamide endocannabinoid. I don't know if that made any sense, but But the endocannabinoid is the same molecule as the phytocannabinoid, and one is produced in a plant, and one is produced in the human body. Okay. Or by the human body.
Absolutely, and doctors haven't been taught that, have they?
No, doctor. Well, it's being taught in some of the better medical schools now. The doctors that are out there now don't. I mean, you say endocannabinoid system, and they don't have a clue. If a doctor knows anything, they're going to know two phytocannabinoids. They're going to know THC, of course. You know, that's, oh my God, that's the scary one. And then cannabidiol, which is CBD, the CBD molecule. And that one, people are actually coming around to the value of that one, because that one is just incredible. I mean, it does basically everything. It's an antiviral, an antifungal, an anti-malarial. It's got some anti-carcinogen properties. It's a pain reliever. I mean, it just goes on and on what CBD does.
Do you know what else it is, David? It's an anti-pharmaceutical.
Yeah. Well, all of these are anti-pharmaceuticals. And I've got actually six endocannabinoid, phytocannabinoid equivalents. The research up to now has determined that there are two. My research, I work with a laboratory in Indiana. They have done some amazing things, you know, that's been kind of working with me. Essentially, we've determined that there are four other phytocannabinoids that act on the same receptors as the endocannabinoids act on. And the beautiful thing is you can determine things like we've talked about THC and CBD. I haven't even talked about the properties of THC, but we've talked about those two a little bit. There are four other phytocannabinoids, and I've got the equivalent endocannabinoids too, if you want to go that deep. But one is like CBN, the CBN molecule, the THCV molecule, which is really key, and then the CBC molecule, that's your anti-cancer molecule. There's CBG, which just synergizes all the others. And the beautiful thing about this medicine is all of these molecules work together to make you feel better. It's not that approach of that the pharmaceutical industry has, where, okay, well, you've got this symptom, you're in pain. Oh, here's your molecule. And then, oh, that molecule has produced this side effect. You've got some constipation because of that molecule. Here's your molecule. And then, oh, that molecule has created some depression. Oh, well, here's your molecule. Oh, that molecule is winding you up so that you're just going too fast. Oh, well, here's your molecule. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's all because of economics. This whole thing is all because it's a beautiful business plan. And once you get to that business plan and got it created, then you can start to bully people. You know, you can bully doctors, and you can create your own paradigm, your own worldview of how medicine should be done. And the thinking that Big Pharma has is that medicine should be done synthetically rather than naturally.
One of the things I think which works against cannabis and the public acceptance of cannabis is the stoner mentality.
That's an issue. And I kind of stay away from that, because I look at this as medicine. And I'm not really into the recreational scene. Back in college, that was kind of the whole thing. You know, like Bill Clinton, he didn't inhale. Well, in college, I inhaled deeply and frequently.
David, I want to ask you a question about your vaping. How often do you vape?
I generally medicate, three times a day. Well, I started medicating three times a day. I have gotten kind of so that I'm now medicating generally like twice a day. because I've stopped doing it so much in the evening. The indicas really, for me, the indicas have not really helped me sleep. I mean, my mind just has a hard time shutting down, and so I don't sleep well, and so I've dropped down to like twice a day, where because essentially that's how I control my pain.
And tell listeners the difference between the indica and sativa and how it impacts you.
Okay, well, all of this is about body chemistry, and for me, the indicas don't work as well as the sativas. Other people really like the indicas because that's what their body needs. You know, you determine what strains work best for you, and it's a really interesting field, because you can say, okay, like I can say, well, and I don't know if I'm answering the question right, but I can say, well, sativas are generally thought to put you to sleep, and that's because of a particular molecule called myrcene. I look at this from a molecular approach, so I know what the individual molecules do. And the sativas and indicas, the difference between a sativa and an indica is a sativa is more of an activating strain. When you want to be productive during the day and, you know, do what you need to do and, like I say, be productive, you medicate with a sativa. In the evening when you want to relax, say you want to watch a Netflix marathon, something like that, I used to watch a lot of the show Breaking Bad. And an indica is really good for just relaxation and just kind of hanging out. Indicas are usually thought to help you go to sleep, and they do, because of the myrcene that is, you know, the ratio of myrcene that's prevalent in that strain.
You know, one of the often asked questions that we get here is someone will send us an email and saying, "My wife has breast cancer. What strain should I take?" Or my husband has prostate cancer.
Corey? Okay, well, cancer is a whole different thing, because with cancer, what you have to do is upregulate your endocannabinoid system. You need a lot of THC. There's something called FECO oils, full extract cannabis oil. Sometimes they call it Rick Simpson oil. And that's really the key for cancer, is to upregulate your system. And once you get that cancer, you know, killed off, then what you have to do is bring your endocannabinoid system back down into balance. And then you know, after you kill the cancer, then, yeah, you switch back to vaporization, or you switch to vaporization. But the key is to just, you know, get rid of that cancer. And once you do that, then you can bring your system back into balance. Okay, that's the way I look at things. Do you agree with me, Corey?
Pretty much, yeah. I certainly do.
Because you've got the experience.
Well, I've got the experience on the cancer end. Yeah, you're correct.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Didn't you do some stuff? I only looked at your Facebook page yesterday. Didn't you start out on the Rick Simpson oils?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. See, and that's the beautiful thing, because you did exactly right.
Well, I'm glad, because that's probably part of the reason I'm here.
Right. So, yeah, you did exactly what you should have done. And the first thing that you did, I'll guarantee, the first thing that you did is you did your research. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's all I did day in, day out for weeks.
Right.
Yeah, 12, 14 hours a day.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do all day. Or, you know, every day, that's pretty much what I've been doing since the past 6 years.
Tell us a little about your book.
My book is basically what it is it's a textbook for medical cannabis patients. It's called Medical Cannabis, the Definitive Guide. It's available on Amazon and Kindle. You can find it on my Facebook page. You can find a link to it on my Facebook page. You go to David A. Dawson. Make sure you put the A, because if you don't, you're going to get to a photographer, that this really cool photographer with the same name. I mean, he's just awesome. He's an awesome guy.
Does he photograph cannabis plants?
No. Actually, he he does some desert scenes and some really, really neat photos of buildings and stuff. But
he's not you.
No. If you put the David A. Dawson in my profile, photo has a picture of a Weimaraner dog.
Oh, okay. That's great.
And that's how you can find me. And I think I put my book on the first section of the Facebook page, so you can just scroll down and it'll take you right to my book and a link to my book.
David, in your research for your book, was there one thing that stood out for you about cannabis that surprised you or you didn't know beforehand?
Well, I didn't know until about 2010. I wasn't aware of the endocannabinoid, phytocannabinoid equivalents. The thing with me was I realized right early on that I'm not going to be allowed to study the phytocannabinoids. Okay, so I went after studying the endocannabinoids. And you can study the endocannabinoids easily, you know, just get a laboratory together and somebody that's willing to work with you that knows what they're doing about so that they can extract the endocannabinoids. And you can work with the endocannabinoids. There's no problem there. And the beautiful thing about working with the endocannabinoids are that they are the exact same molecule as the phytocannabinoids. So you're actually working with both, except you're not working with cannabis plant because, oh my God, that's the demon weed.
Yeah, that's right. David, because of your condition, muscular dystrophy, you, I'm sure, run into other patients who have the same problem as you do. Do they show any interest in taking cannabis?
My patients come to me because in Illinois, I just moved out of Illinois. That's what I'm doing in Portland right now, is looking for like housing and that sort of thing. But in Illinois, yeah, they came to me because I was the guy that knew how to get certified, and I was the guy that was training the physicians. You know, in Illinois, that's what people came to me for, because I knew how to treat patients with the variety of conditions that Illinois allows, which right now are like 40 different conditions. So I can treat. Now, I can't diagnose. I don't diagnose, and that's what differentiates me from a physician, is because I don't diagnose and I don't do surgery. All I do is really treat specific medical conditions.
Have you seen many people turn around a condition and make a remarkable change in their life?
Sure. I mean, this is it's not me that does it. It's the medicine. And what happens with the medicine is it produces kind of a sense of well-being, simply because, and the reason that happens is because people come to me, like, say, with fibromyalgia or, cancer, muscular dystrophy or whatever the condition might be, chronic pain, and they would come to me, and their endocannabinoid system is out of whack. And it's out of whack because the body is not producing one particular, usually at least one particular endocannabinoid in appropriate amounts. And so what you can do is you can say, well, there are strains that have that particular endocannabinoid, phytocannabinoid, or that particular phytocannabinoid, which is the equivalent of the endocannabinoid. I don't know if that made sense, because it kind of got, I mean, this whole thing gets so convoluted sometimes. But if say, like somebody with diabetes, what they're lacking is an endocannabinoid called berotamine, okay? Mm-hmm. And the equivalent of berotamine is the THCV molecule, tetrahydrocannabinol. Okay, it's the THCV molecule. So what you can do is you can say, okay, well, you've got diabetes, you're lacking in the THCV molecule. So we'll get the phytocannabinoid that has a high proportion of the THCV molecule and treat you that way. And so what we can do is we can get you, get that molecule straightened out in your body. We can get you some more verotamine, the endocannabinoid. And then, of course, there's pain issues that deal with diabetes that come from diabetes as well, and diabetic neuropathy, that sort of thing. And that generally is treated by another molecule, the THC molecule. And so that molecule treats pain. But the key is, and I think I mentioned this early on, is that verotamine and the THCV molecule, that's key. And the reason is because the THCV molecule and verotamine, they are what are referred to as inhibitors at the receptor. And that just simply means that rather than giving you the munchies, which a lot of the cannabinoids will do, the THCV molecule, it actually inhibits appetite. So it treats, that particular aspect of diabetes. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, David, in conclusion, is there anything you'd like to tell listeners?
Well, just basically, I guess, do your research. And my book, Medical Cannabis, The Definitive Guide, it's a textbook for the medical cannabis patient. It discusses proper dosing techniques, how to select the molecules that you need for your particular medical condition, that sort of thing. It's got a section in there a chapter in there about various specific medical conditions and how to treat using cannabis, that sort of thing. So, but that's the book. It's a textbook for medical cannabis patients, Medical Cannabis, The Definitive Guide. The other thing I wanted to talk about is a project that I've got going on now, and that's here in Oregon, where we're setting up a health and wellness retreat, kind of a resort that's based around a variety of therapeutic approaches to the healthcare industry. We're doing some stuff with yoga. We've actually have a teacher that's coming from the yoga center out of all. We have a dietary approach. We have a world-renowned chef that's going to be teaching some classes in healthy, diets, how to create healthy dishes that are, appetizing and that sort of thing. We'll have acupuncturists, massage therapists. We're adding like flotation therapies and that sort of thing, and doing some amazing things with prosthetics and genetics. There are really so many opportunities in the healthcare industry in addition to the 420, the cannabis thing. And so what we have going on is an integrative approach to medicine, and it's going to be groundbreaking. I can pretty much guarantee it. It's just going to be groundbreaking.
David, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for this, and all the best in the future.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, David.
And just before we sign off, Corey and I would like to remind you that if you'd like us to continue these podcasts, if you think they are of some value, please go to our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and make a donation, make a pledge. The donation can be big or small, a one-time donation, or a monthly donation, whatever you like. All donations are gratefully appreciated. Help us in our mission to help others. Wherever you are in the world, thank you very much for your support, and thank you for listening to Cannabis Health Radio.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.